A few years back, people were only interested in maize, wheat and rice. Now they are mostly interested in maize, wheat and rice, but some money is coming the way of research in terms of improving both fruit and vegetable production. And my belief is that it is a much better way of growing people out of poverty by adopting high-level horticulture than trying to get staple crops to be improved very much more than they are already. If you have just a small hectareage of land, as most people do in the developing world, then you can make good money out of horticulture. But if you grow rice or you grow maize or wheat, you're likely to remain poor forever.
How do you quantify that statement?
The cost of vegetables in the market are three or four times higher than they perhaps need to be. And therefore, until production levels increase very substantially, it'll always be more profitable to grow vegetables and fruits than it will be to grow staple cereals of one sort or the next. You do need the staple cereals, there's no denying that. But more people are malnourished because they eat too much staple cereals and not enough vegetables than the other way around. So if we want to deal with human health issues, then we have to make sure that vegetables and fruits are nutrient dense, cheap enough to be available to all people, and that people eat enough of them on a daily basis.
What are the impediments to expanding that horticultural footprint in those developing countries?
We don't know yet enough about how to grow vegetables properly. Insects and diseases are the major problems for farmers today. They were yesterday and will probably will be tomorrow. But we have to have research to be able to keep pace with being able to cope with these things. And the other issue is that we don't support farmers very well in terms of getting things to market. So lots of vegetables are wasted in the field, on the way to market, and when they get to market.
Dr. Keating, you had a warning for any Australian horticulturalists in the room today at your opening address, and that is that if they ignore the potential of Central Asia, they do so at their own peril. What is that potential, and what role might Australian horticulturalists play in filling it?
In Central Asia and the Caucasus countries, there is essentially no private sector production in horticulture, but it is beginning to develop. In this area, fruit and vegetables are of the highest quality, and I believe that in the future we will start to see them competing very strongly on the export markets. There is an opportunity for Australian seed companies to help in producing the sorts of varieties that they need, but at the moment they're doing it very much on their own. And I believe that with the proper partners, the professional partners they can find here in Australia, they could do much better.
Professor Dinah Keating, you've also raised awareness about this apparent contradiction between the fact that there's some 2 billion people worldwide living with obesity, while at the same time nearly 1 billion people don't have enough to eat.
When people become a little bit richer than they were before, one of the things they do is they spend more money on food. In most cases, that tends to be then more meat, more sugary foods, more oily foods. And in all honesty, we don't need these in our diet to the same extent. If more research and development could be done on fruit and vegetables and the price could fall, then people would be willing perhaps to buy more of these crops. And also, it's not clear that they understand that they have to eat a full 400 grams of fruit and vegetables every day, and a good diversity of different crops of different types. There's no point in eating just one vegetable for the rest of your life. You need to eat a whole range, and under those circumstances, you can then make sure that your health is protected and you avoid the scourge of type 2 diabetes.
What does that kind of statistic, though, or that contrast say to you as somebody that's dedicated their research time and effort towards ending poverty?
Well, it's not just a question of ending poverty, it's making sure that every child that gets up in the morning is not malnourished, therefore will achieve their full mental potential, their full physical potential. Unfortunately, many, many children remain severely malnourished. And also many teenage girls and young women who are about to become pregnant are in a malnourished state, and as a result of that, tend to have malnourished fetuses as well. And once you have a malnourished fetus, it's likely that when they become mothers and become pregnant, then it is likely that they also will have malnourished fetuses. So it's a very difficult, vicious cycle to break into. And the only way to do that is to make sure that really well-balanced diets are given to young women and to young men before they start reproducing.
I'm speaking with Dr. Dino Keating, who is the outgoing managing director of the World Vegetable Centre and has already been on stage this morning at the opening address of the International Symposia on Tropical and Temperate Horticulture here in Cairns. What is the role of international leaders in assisting with that goal, and how do individual leaders influence what happens in terms of the research and development?
It is a very important consideration that all of the donor agents that support agricultural and horticultural research understand that particular nexus between too much staple cereals and not enough fruit and vegetables. A better balance is required in terms of the funding. At the moment, the lion's share of all funding goes to staple cereals. It has done for the last 50 years. But I believe that the time has come for that to change. And that more effort should be given to these more nutritious indigenous vegetables, for example, which are already nutrient dense and not a huge amount of work is required. I believe that things like rice and maize certainly require maintenance research, but I don't think they need the lion's share of effort today because the price of vegetables and fruits is pretty high. And that inhibits many people in developing countries from procuring them in the market and consuming them.
What about in the current geopolitical context, though, when we see large first world democracies like the United States of America, like Britain and its exit from the European Union? There seems to be a desire of the electorate to look more inwards rather than outwards. How does that affect your role as somebody that is trying to make a difference?
I would be delighted if the US and the UK were to think a bit more about ensuring that their populations had well-balanced diets. There's far too much obesity in the UK and in the US. This costs trillions of dollars for the National Health Services. That doesn't mean that vegetables for the developing world is not important. It is extremely important. But I believe that if people understood the consequence of poor diets and the economic cost for the government, that they would radically rearrange their thinking.
Are these goals mutually exclusive? Improving first world health and improving third and fourth world nutrition?
No, I think they're very much complementary. For example, the world's highest statistic for type 2 diabetes is in the Gulf countries. And the Gulf countries import large amounts of food from developing countries. So if you're a developing country farmer ready to export to Dubai or Qatar or Abu Dhabi or wherever, then that will be highly desirable because it's difficult to grow vegetables in those very hot environments. It's possible, but difficult. But they have a huge problem with type 2 diabetes, and they need to really take that into consideration if their health is not going to be seriously undermined in the future.
And how important is it to make sure that that is part of your narrative at a time when perhaps people are feeling apathetic or helpless in light of the global hunger situation?
Well, there's no shortage of apathy in terms of people who say we don't like GMOs or we don't like insecticides, we don't like herbicides, etc. Well, in truth, some of these things are needed, and I believe that if people can be taught to farm effectively, can have a proper distribution of crops within their farming enterprises, they can end up to be more sustainable, more resilient, more profitable, particularly if they only have very small land holdings, as is very much the case in South Asia or in sub-Saharan Africa.
Dr. Keating, I think you've exhausted all of my questions. Were there any other particular messages that, you know, you're here in Cairns, you're addressing horticulturalists from around the world, but is there something that you'd hope that audiences in Australia might take home from a symposia like this being on their doorstep?
Yes, I have a message, and that message is eat a better balanced diet than you're eating at the moment. Think twice before you eat huge steaks, sugary foods, drink large quantities of alcohol. Eat a properly balanced diet and you will live to be 100 years old and in good health. And I hope that that is the case for all Australians in the future.
Well, there's a universal message that we can all have a heartfelt interest in. Thank you so much for spending some time speaking with the ABC here at the Cairns Convention Centre today.
Thank you very much indeed, Charlie. It's my pleasure to speak to the ABC. Thank you.